Spring unfolding around us. All kinds of Maine residents get excited about spring, not just the human ones. For plants and animals, this is the beginning of a new year, a new cycle of life. The PBS series Nature is highlighting and celebrating the season with a three-night special broadcast next week, American Spring Live. One of the locations featured in the program is in Maine. Maine Public is also taking part. Perhaps you saw the special Maine Spring Live last night. It re-airs on Maine Public Television Sunday at 5. And tomorrow, there's a special event at Maine Audubon in Falmouth. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What are the signs of spring? What do you look for every year? How are nature and its cycles changing in the face of climate change? And how can citizen science play a role? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Peepers, we welcomed spring's official arrival formally about a month ago, but for most of Maine, it is just showing up now. It is damp, but we are seeing buds on the trees. We can hear the spring peepers. And there are more signs of spring. Today, we're going to talk about recognizing those signs of spring, appreciating nature and the seasons, and getting involved with citizen science and more. Joining me in the studio, Beth Bisson. She's Associate Director and Extension Program Leader for Maine Sea Grant at the University of Maine, Orono. She's also Program Coordinator for Signs of the Seasons, a New England phenology program. Noah Perlot, is it Perlot?
Perlet
is Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Environmental Studies at the University of New England, and Eric Topper, Director of Education for Maine Audubon. As always, we want to hear from you. What signs of spring do you look for this time of year? Any favorite signs of the season? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. Beth, I've learned a new word this week. What is phenology?
Phenology is, it's that word has been around a long time, but I myself did not know the definition. And it's still, until I started working with the Signs of the Seasons program, it means the timing of seasonal biological changes. Things like bird migrations, when plants start to flower, when you start to see woodchucks for the first time in the spring, all of those biological changes that happen seasonally are phenology.
Okay, and it's phenology,
right,
in case anybody has seen it or wants to know how to spell it. And that's what's going on now. I mean, I was driving down from Augusta the other day, and I saw a giant flock of geese, which is, you know, always so exciting. So why don't I ask you, Noah, what are you looking for this time of year? What are you most excited to see?
I think it's the opposite. What am I not excited to see? And to me, that's the beauty of spring, in that every time you're outside, whether it's day or night, there's something new to hear or see or smell or touch. And, you know, that's why it's such an exciting time to be alive and in this place.
Okay, so what did you see this morning that was exciting to you?
This morning, the peepers, just like how you started the show, were going absolutely bonkers in my yard. And then when I got to campus, we saw tree swallows fighting over feathers at nest boxes, which was super exciting as well.
Okay, your turn, Eric. What are you excited about this time of year? What is everybody looking out for at Audubon?
For me, it's about the activity and the people engaging. I think this is a sign. This is a time when people are sort of also waking up, and people are paying more attention, and people are getting more rewards for paying attention. And so that to me is our activity follows phenology and seasonal migration, and so that's a really exciting part. We're kind of on right now. And something new every day.
So we're doing this program here, this Maine Calling program, today as opposed to another day, because there's a lot going on. PBS has its new special, American Spring Live, that's going to be next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. on Maine Public Television. Last night, we debuted the Maine Spring Live program, which will also re-air on Sunday at 5. Also, I have posted that on our Facebook page if anybody'd like to watch it on the computer. But also, you have a big event tomorrow. Tell us about it.
We do. We're hosting an event called Spring Live. It's in partnership with Maine Public. We have about 25 or so other organizations and partners coming to sort of introduce people to various ways to participate in spring actively. I know Signs of the Seasons is one of those entities that will be there. And so it's a big sort of all ages event from 10 to 3 at Gilsland Farm in Falmouth, free for the and open to the public.
Okay, Beth, tell us about Signs of the Seasons. Is this something that people, regular people, can be involved in?
Absolutely. We have volunteers of all ages all throughout the state. We have participants in every county. It's a program that we started with my colleague Esperanza Stanchoff, who is with Sea Grant and Cooperative Extension at the University of Maine. And it's a program where citizens make observations of phenology, the seasonal timing of those changes in 22 species that we've identified as being particularly important for observing climate change throughout the state. And those observations, whether you see a leaf coming out or a hummingbird for the first time, those are recorded in a national database through the National Phenology Network. And all of those data are available for researchers that we're working with directly here in Maine, but also all across the country, so that we can start to develop a long-term data set of observations using all the same protocols. And so it's a really powerful way to make the information that we're gathering all the time just through our daily lives available for climate researchers who are interested and also resource managers.
That's interesting. Looking at 22 species, I'm guessing the phenology of species are interrelated.
Exactly. And so that's why we've chosen some species that are very tightly linked, like milkweed and monarchs. Because, of course, the monarch caterpillars need to have milkweed available to feed when they hatch from the egg. And so by monitoring both of those species, we can start to keep track of how some species are changing in different ways from others.
Is one of the concerns with climate change is as maybe the pace of change with one species comes out of sync with the other species that depends on it? You're nodding over here, Noah. Is this something what you look at?
That's the great question, this idea of mismatch. When, you know, an animal or a plant is essentially looking for a resource and is relying on that resource, whether it's to feed their chicks caterpillars or whether it's a flower that needs to be able to bloom in full sun versus in shade, is that resource going to be available to the organism that's looking for it in the future as it has in the past?
And what do we understand so far? Are we seeing this happening?
Totally mixed. And it's a really complicated picture out there, and that just sort of makes the waters more muddy in that there are patterns, but then there's always species that sort of buck those trends and say, well, I'm not really going to change. And so it's a very complicated world out there. And that's also for me, and working in a place that our job is to create knowledge, it's a very exciting time to do that, to really go deep and explore those kinds of questions.
Tell us about some of the projects you're working on.
Well, I have a climate change project with a student working in Vermont. We have two species of songbirds that we study in hayfields and pastures and have had studied them for a long time. One of those species spends its winter in Argentina. It's the bobolink. And the other one spends its winter in sort of the Carolinas, and that's the savannah sparrow. And we're looking at this last 18 years of data to understand what the changes in weather that they experience on the winter, how that correlates to the timing that they start reproducing when they get to Vermont in the spring. And then we're using the past historical weather data and forecasting that for the next 80 years to think about how these birds, if at all, are going to change the timing of the reproduction. And in the New England, these types of questions are, I think, really important and complicated because they're nesting in a place that's managed by farmers. And the timing of management is affected by the weather as well. And so there's like this interaction between what the birds want to deal with, but then what the farmers want to deal with and how that affects them.
I'm guessing as we sit here in have this conversation on yet another wet day this spring, that it's not just long-term climate change, but the weather year to year that affects some of what you're looking at.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's variations in both directions. And you have to be careful to not interpret a single year too strongly. You really have to look at long-term trends.
Okay. Eric, talk about this spring and what you're seeing at Audubon that maybe is different than other years.
Well, I think that one of the projects that's really exciting for us right now to be involved in is the Maine Bird Atlas, which I think has been a subject of other shows and is a really important kind of slice of the work that Noah and Beth do in terms of birds in Maine. And right now so Maine Audubon is the outreach partner. That's a project headed by Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife and funded by them. And Maine Audubon is the outreach partner to engage birders, primarily citizen scientists, in recording signs of breeding behavior that they're seeing. So it's this extra layer in addition to the super valuable data around what birds you're seeing and when. Now we're keeping track, for example, yesterday in Deering Oaks, the staff naturalist and I saw a crow flying overhead with a mouth full of sticks and twigs, which is nesting material. And so that was a sign. In that case, that's a confirmed sign of breeding, of crow breeding. And so that's going to be a really interesting layer. The other piece of that is the last time that project was done was 40 years ago. So we're seeing species, we're seeing cardinals breeding here that weren't recorded in that census last time. So really interesting examples like that.
All right. And we're talking about this on the edges, but what we're really talking about here is more citizen science, that this is something that can't be done without regular people getting out there and taking notes.
Absolutely. And I should say, on behalf of a lot of us, we're transitioning that phrase. That phrase has been really,
really
effective. And we're preferring the phrase community science now, because we want the point of community science is it's public, it's participatory, it's everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a citizen. It doesn't matter if what you feel like your role is. You can still contribute to science because you're on the ground and you're in the real world. And so community science is sort of the nomer that we're trying to adopt. But I know a lot of us are struggling with that transition because we've been calling it citizen science for a long time.
Well, that's great. It's the first time I've ever heard it. Two things, phenology and citizen science. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you'd like to share with us what your favorite sign of spring is, what you look for every year, and how one sign may signal another sign. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Some examples, our producer Cindy Hahn notes that her family lives near the Presumpscot River, and they are always looking for the alewives, and they've noticed that there's a tiny white flower that appears in the grass. And then the ospreys start flying, and they know it's time for the alewife run in the river. And I'm wondering if you all have sort of signals that you're excited about something, and when this happens, then I know this is going to happen. Do you have some of those?
Well, one of the things that I get most excited about is, of course, we have a few crocuses underneath our dryer vent, which those are kind of our precursors to the real spring, but I know it's really happening when I see the snowdrops blossoming in another part of my yard, because those are a little bit less protected, and I know that there's no going back. The winter is really over when that happens.
I just love that, what you just read. That was, I'm not familiar with that, but to me that's so exciting, because you really never know where those observations pan out. There's been some really incredible work done by Richard Premack at Boston University, taking Thoreau's work. He collected really clear phenology data for 6 years, and they're now taking his work 150 years later and looking at climate change and how that's changed plants and birds and even the distribution of them. And he wasn't intending to do that. He was just writing down out of his own interest. He didn't have any goals with that. And so that observation that you brought out, you just never know where that will pay off in the future.
Our volunteer Isaac writes, at the very tail end of April into May, all kinds of colorful warblers flood into Maine as they migrate north, taking advantage of the budding evergreens. Individual species will each specialize on a different part of a tree where a different insect will emerge. Warblers. Okay, what about you, Eric? What are you?
Well, I share a lot of those. I always cherish the return of the red maples flowering and those popping out, especially in a lot of the landscapes where I live and work, where Norway maple has become the sort of prevalent species and invasive species of maple. And so the red maples kind of holding their ground is always a great sign. I'm also really drawn to the sort of Native American influence. And like so many things, Native Americans were sort of the first phenologists. And we have legacies like the shad bush, which is a common name for the serviceberry tree, which its early spring bloom coming up here pretty shortly will be a sign of fish migration. And that's why that's how that tree got its common name, is its link to that being a sign that the fishing is going to be good.
That when it blooms, the shad will run?
That's a sign of the seasons changing such that the fishing is going to be good coming up here.
You look like you wanted to jump in, Beth.
Oh, I was going to share one of the things that I love to share with our participants when we do our trainings is that those stories and those links with our natural world show up in literature, too. And so it's fun when you come across those. One of the nursery rhymes in my kids' storybooks is a swarm of bees in May is worth a load of hay. A swarm of bees in June is worth a silver spoon. A swarm of bees in July isn't worth a fly. And so it could just sound like a silly rhyme, but if you think about the phenology aspects of that, if you don't have your pollinators available at the right time, you won't have a good crop. But if they're available right in June, that's when you get your best crop, and July is too late. And so I love seeing those connections in literature as well as just in everyday life.
You work with Sea Grant. What signs of spring are there in the ocean?
One of our species is rockweed, which is the common name for Ascophyllum nodosum, which is the long, stringy seaweed that is just everywhere along the coast. And we have volunteers who visit rockweed in coastal areas all the way from Wells up into Eastport. And we're working with researcher Dr. Jessica Mulin at Maine Maritime Academy, studying the timing of when the rockweed is reproductive, because all of that reproductive material that it produces every year, those big sort of squishy bubbles that it produces, that's the reproductive vesicle. And when those are released, it's a huge source of nutrients for the marine environment. And so rockweed is an incredibly important species commercially, but also for the ecology of the coastal environment. And so Dr. Mulin has been working with our volunteers to collect that information because she uses it in her research. And we just couldn't do that work without all of the volunteers who are participating throughout the state.
Joining me on the line now, Fred Kaufman, executive producer of Nature, the Wildlife and Natural History series on PBS. Thanks for calling in, Fred.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Tell us about the concept between next week's three-night special, American Spring Live.
Well, the idea is, and it's a very ambitious and innovative idea, first to do a live nature show, which is kind of the exact opposite of what we normally do, because it takes us about 2 to 3 years to actually make a wildlife documentary. And PBS asked if we could do three of them in 3 nights. So very different, completely different muscles. But, you know, spring is really nature's way of having one big giant outdoor party. Everything gets triggered by the longer days, the warming temperatures, the snow melt. And in fact, so many of the great sequences you see in wildlife films happen in spring. It's when there are births and migrations and pollination. So it's a really very bountiful time for great behavior to be filmed. And we wanted to try a very unique way, and that is to do things live. So you're not going to get a polished documentary. You know, sometimes it takes us 2 weeks to film 40 seconds for a documentary. This is going to be more observational, more sort of getting your hands and feet dirty with being out there and seeing how it unfolds live.
I understand that some of this is taking place in Maine.
That's right. Our first sequence really is going to be a lamb birth.
How do you time that?
Well, you know, everybody asks that question. So I'm going to give you an answer and I'll pull back the curtain a little bit on the production. We're in the lambing season, and it was very important for us to get, you know, look at, see what we can do live, do a live birth. So in all our live locations, and we're going to be in a bat cave in Texas, and we're in the Everglades and some other places, we will have a crew there over the weekend. So we will certainly have a Lambert. Now, whether it will actually happen at 8:07 on Monday night, fingers crossed, but if not, people will see one that happened anywhere between 24 and 48 hours earlier. And then the live piece will certainly be watching the mom and baby kind of cuddling and doing their thing together. So our fingers are crossed. We're right in the middle of the lambing season, and hopefully over the course of the hour we'll see something.
Well, wonderful. Best of luck. It is very ambitious, really exciting, and I'm proud to be part of public media doing something so exciting on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And Fred, before I let you go, I have to tell you that I just love nature, and I so appreciate the work that you all do. And it's a wonderful weekend when I can binge watch nature on PBS, and like I watched the polar bear one the night before last. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me on. Let me talk a little bit about it, and I hope people do turn in at some point over the three nights, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Well, thank you so much. That was Fred Kaufman, executive producer of Nature on PBS. The three-part special, American Spring Live, airs on Maine Public Television starting April 29th. Maine Spring Live had its debut last night. It will air again Sunday at 5. It is also on our Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does BCM Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve. NHLandLaw.com.
President Trump has spoken to the National Rifle Association before.
You have an administration fighting to protect your Second Amendment.
His speech to the group today comes as gun owners give mixed reviews of the administration's record on the Second Amendment. I'm Ari Shapiro, Trump and the NRA, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on Living on Earth, designing refugee camps that can become livable cities.
When refugees started coming over the border with Uganda in late 2016, they were in a very densely forested area that had to be immediately adapted to fit the tens of thousands of people.
I'm Steve Kerwin. The refugee camp experiment in Uganda. Next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Join us Sunday morning at 7 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Signs of the Season, Nature Appreciation, Citizen Science, and more. Joining me in the studio, Noah Perlett, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Environmental Studies at UNE. Eric Topper, Director of Education for Maine Audubon, and Beth Bisson, Associate Director for Maine Sea Grant at UMaine Orono, and Program Coordinator for Signs of the Seasons. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Marty in South Portland. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Love the show. First off, a couple of observations. About April 15th, I was coming home from work and saw my first robins. And that's a sign of spring for me. And then the next day, that night, I heard the peepers screaming out loud, like, yay. And then on my way to work the next morning, saw a groundhog lumbering along. And it's like, a threefer. This is great. And I work at the mall. And for me, ice out is a big thing, too, when the last snow pile disappears.
But yeah.
That reminded me of something else. Talking with some siblings at dinner, one of them has a camp up on Rangeley, and they've been keeping records of when ice out was for like 100 years. And another sibling mentioned, oh, yeah, we have another pond that we keep an eye out on. So it gave me the idea, the citizen science, you may have a vast trove of records already available. They just need to be collected and collated. And if there were a simple way for people to get that information to those who are interested in it, we may be a whole wealth of information that's just untapped, just sitting out there.
Sure, Marty. All the people who have family camps on lakes all over Maine Do any of you know of somebody who might like that information? Go ahead.
Yes, the National Phonology Network does have an effort to digitize historical records to make them those available, because of course fishermen and farmers have been keeping logs like that forever, and it's essential to how they make decisions. But it's all of the home naturalists and just nature observers keeping notebooks for many, many years. All of that information can be very powerful. We had a ranger at Baxter State Park give us a notebook of phonology observations from many, many years working at the park. And we have that, and we're working on digitizing that right now. So it's just an example.
So somebody like Marty can go to the National Phonology Network website and...
Right, and there's a section where you can look at historical information, but all of the data that's being collected all across the country by programs like Signs of the Seasons is all available there, and you can. There's visualization tools where you can look at it, and they have a spring forecasting tool that's really interesting to see how this spring compares with other springs in the past.
Great. Well, Marty, thanks so much for your call. We'll go to Betsy calling from Parsonsfield. Hi, Betsy. Go ahead.
Oh, happy springtime. Thank you for taking my call. I have a tidbit or two. This information came to me in 1987 from my daughter, who was at Pinkham Notch with the Appalachian Mountain Trail gathering weather information from Mount Washington. And the tidbit is, the advance of the seasons from north to south takes place at a rate of about 100 miles per week or half a mile per hour. I don't know if that's still true, taking into account global warming. Also, in my neck of the woods, for some weird reason, I travel a lot of territory, but I noticed the bear did not start marking their areas, scraping their trees until the beginning of last week in my area. And they usually do that a little earlier in April. And yesterday, as I was cleaning out my frog pools, I found two big clouds of frog eggs. That's all. Oh, no, one more tidbit. What was it? The shadbush?
Yes.
Early flowers. Yeah. The carnelian cherry, which, you know, isn't a cherry. It's a dogwood, but it's readily available from nurseries. That is going past its full bloom now. I think that is the earliest bee food around for folks to keep in mind when they're buying shrubs.
So it seems to you, does it seem to you that the carnelian cherry and the frog eggs are early, but that the bears are late?
Yes, exactly. How peculiar. I don't know the reason for this.
Well, Betsy, thanks so much for calling in. Thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I have a special connection to the shad bush, especially because I was actually married at Maine Audubon at Gislin Farm, and the shad bush was in flower at that time. So that's a connection that I have. But I also noticed that some things can seem like they're early while others are late. And that's just an interesting feature of how different species respond to changing temperatures, both from one year to the next, but over the long term, just like Noah was mentioning earlier, there are different strategies of adapting to change.
Thanks, Betsy. An email from Shana. Please consider mentioning the Topsom Conservation Commission's talk by Nat Wheelwright about phonology and observing nature May 7th at 6 p.m. at the Topsom Library. So mentioned we did. Nat Wheelwright has been on our program. Terrific guest. A tweet from Greg. Migrating salamanders and calling frogs are my favorite signs of spring. In fact, I'm hosting Maine's newest citizen science project to help protect road-crossing amphibians and collect data on them, called At the Big Night. And he's got contact information. We'll post that on our Facebook page. We have volunteers all over the state and as far south as Pennsylvania. Important, I saw some salamanders smushed on the road the other day, so they're crossing now.
It's huge. These efforts that the the writer is talking about are really picking up a lot of steam throughout New England, in that there's mass migrations that occur really on the first warm rain of the spring. I mean, just there could be tens of thousands of individuals coming across. And you just imagine if traffic is really heavy that night when they're trying to cross roads to get to other habitat, mortality can be incredibly high. So citizen scientists who volunteer their time to go out and help these organisms, it's so valuable.
When you say first warm rain of spring, what constitutes warm?
Probably chilly to you, but warm to a frog that's been literally frozen solid all winter.
So if it's 45 degrees and raining, yeah. Stay off the road?
No, I would never say stay off the road. Of course not. Yeah, but maybe slow down. Maybe slow down. That first, you know, when you're seeing all the snow sort of disappearing in the spring and you're in around 50 degrees and it's raining, yeah, maybe slow down and keep your eyes out for those little guys.
And I'd love to pipe in with that being a perfect example of community science with a purpose. Those recording those crossings, that road mortality, if that stuff is happening in concentrated spots, we can do something about it. We can work with road builders and install culverts underneath. Maine Audubon's longstanding community science project called Wildlife Road Watch is exactly about that. It's about documenting places where there is clear animal migration that is being impacted by roadways. And again, the next time that road gets regraded, a culvert can get put in for a passageway underneath those to connect those two wetlands.
So you want to know if someone's on a walk and they see that several frogs or salamanders have been run over.
Absolutely. Those places where there's a lot happening and, you know, that's about mobilizing volunteers to go out there. The Big Night in Cumberland is a great example where the police are working to manage traffic for the Big Night, and community volunteers are helping those amphibians across the road literally and physically. And again, that becomes a place that's on our radar screen for a priority place.
We'll go to Mark calling from Millinocket. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. So I'm in the park naturalist at Bachelor State Park, and I was very pleased to hear that some of our records have been helping out with the National Phenology Network. So I just wanted to mention a citizen science component to all of this, especially with the Northeast Alpine Flower Watch. So Bachelor State Park, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Green Mountain Club, and Adirondacks, through a grant from National Geographic, we are launching a citizen science project called the Northeast Alpine Flower Watch. And basically, through an app, iNaturalist, we're encouraging folks that are up in the alpine areas to snap their pictures using iNaturalist of some of the flowers, the alpine flowers, and uploading that. And that adds to our vast knowledge. We do have, I think, 5 plots here in the park that we monitor, and that information goes to the National Phenology Network. But what we want to do is there's a large gap between the whites and us, and we're encouraging long-distance hikers or anyone hiking anywhere in Maine, you know, if they're in the alpine area, to take note and add to the great body of science that we have.
Terrific. And Mark, is there information easy to find? I'll post it on our Facebook page. If so, do I just look for alpine flower citizen? Go ahead.
We will post that. We'll post that stuff on your Facebook page.
Wonderful.
Yeah, there are some good tutorials on how to access iNaturalist and how to sign up and how to put your data to the specific project, the Northeast Alpine Flower Watch. And just on another note, just saw a belted kingfisher today, almost caused an accident by stopping so suddenly to see it. We've got some peregrine falcons nesting in the park this year, and yeah, spring is there. It's out there.
It's exciting. Thanks so much for calling in, Mark. Marty on Facebook says, one sign of spring, turkeys gobbling. Turkey hunting season starts Monday. Tweet from Jim, snow fleas, springtails are my first sign of spring. You see them in depressions in the snow. Let's see, migrating, this is from Greg, a tweet, migrating salamanders and calling frogs are my favorite signs of spring. In fact, oh, this is I'd already read, Greg. Sorry about that. So many here. A question for today's guest, a tweet from Ryan. What are some of your favorite activities to introduce children to phenology? Our land trust in York County is always looking for new and engaging ways to inspire future observers. Eric?
Yeah, so I think Maine Audubon has a tremendous amount of programming for kids and for families to get them sort of plugged into what we would characterize as environmental literacy, which is a combination of people understanding the natural world, understanding their place within the natural world, and behaving with conservation in mind. We are very excited to teach families how to sort of make those observations and how to get people involved. We're very encouraging of families participating in Signs of the Seasons. That's a wonderful, a lot of the species that Beth mentioned are species that occur in a lot of our backyards and in our front yards and places like that. I also would encourage people to check out iNaturalist. That was mentioned by someone earlier, a caller, and that is a great site for the way that works is you set up a project so you could make your yard a project on iNaturalist and then work with your family and your kids to record your sightings there. That's kind of that answer of I have 100 years of logbooks on when ice out is, where do I put that? iNaturalist is a digital example of a way you can track year to year what you're seeing. And then going out there, that's channeling Nat Wheelwright again, is go out sort of on a mission with a focus, not just trying to take in everything that you see out there, but let's go out and look for spring flowers. Let's go out and look for amphibians. Let's go out and listen for different bird song. And again, getting families and kids in tune to that seasonal change.
Great. Well, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about phenology, the changing seasons. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to all. And by Cumberland Crossing by Ocean View, a new retirement cottage community proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow on Maine Public Classical.
Who has trouble getting access to reliable internet in New England? And why does it matter?
The internet is a utility at this point. It is a necessity in the state of our culture.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll explore broadband access across our region from rural to urban, plus race and racism on Martha's Vineyard.
We're very kumbaya. We are the world.
Please join us.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Celebrate spring this year at Maine Spring Live, Wildlife, Science, and You. Join Maine Public and Maine Audubon tomorrow morning from 10 until 3 at Gilsland Farm Sanctuary in Falmouth for this outdoor family festival. It's a chance to learn about citizen science, watch wild animal demonstrations, join guided bird walks, or learn about solar energy at Audubon's large solar array, and more. Folks attending can connect with dozens of nature and science-focused organizations. It's a family-oriented event, and there will be food trucks on location as well. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events for details.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, welcoming spring and immersing yourself in nature. Joining me, Eric Topper with Maine Audubon, Beth Bisson with Maine Sea Grant and Signs of the Seasons at UMaine, and Noah Perlett with Environmental Studies at UNE. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about spring because it is spring, Noah, but phenology is not just a spring phenomenon, is it?
It's not. It's all year round. You know, fall migration of birds and leaves falling out of the trees are other signs of phenology as well. And I was thinking about this relative to the last caller who's talking about sort of they're asking about our favorite activities with kids. And for me, my favorite teaching activity is actually with my kids. I go to my kids' primary schools and their preschools, and I band birds with their schools in the fall. And I always catch birds that are both resident species and migrant species. And to be able to hold these tiny animals with these kids and talk about, well, this bird is going to be flying thousands of miles to Florida or whatnot, and this one's going to live here year-round, it just sort of changes their idea of how animals move and what causes those movements.
We'll go to Jean calling from Booth Bay. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I am so happy to be able to listen to you in this spring signs.
Thank you.
class in phonology at Audubon I took years ago. I hope there's still one going on. Also, I wanted to say that Vernal Pools out in Paths in the Woods, you can see and hear, and it's the peepers, they are disappearing, and they, which is sad. The wonder of tiny flowers when you can be an amateur naturalist. Red tiny female blossoms you can hardly see on a beaked hazelnut if you're used to walking in the woods. And here in Booth Bay, if you don't have the woods, which my husband and I intentionally do have and did have, there was a wonderful Booth Bay Region Land Trust, and there's probably one in everybody's community. And you can get out on those paths and see, and the enjoyment of the out-of-doors is spiritually helpful, but it carries over to physical healing. And perhaps one of your people there can talk about that. When I came, looked down on a floor in my house recently, I saw a sign of spring I didn't want to see, and it was a tiny tick.
And oh, yes.
And I went out working
yes.
in the yard and forgot. And so one needs to remember to prepare for that with clothing or something.
Yeah, well, Jean, thank you so much for calling and sharing. And yes, I have had a friend who also discovered the hard way that it is indeed tick season. But thank you for your lovely observations. Cindy in an email says, I work in a retail greenhouse, so I'm often asked when the last frost will happen. We never know for sure, but I have heard that when the lilacs bloom, there will be no frost till fall. Have you all heard that? No? Okay.
I love hearing all of those, you know, corn will be knee-high by the 4th of July and all those sayings. And there's always a new one that I haven't heard before, but I think they're all just, they just show how connected we are. I mean, human beings are animals, just as all the other animals that we're observing around us. And so we need to mark those changes in the seasons just as part of our lives, too.
Mm-hmm. Cliff says in an email, don't forget the pussy willows, one sure sign of spring. And Roger says, for me, the sign that spring is really here is the chorus of peepers and other frogs. There's a swampy area slightly to my south, which comes to life first. Then 2 days later, a deeper toned chorus on a small pond. Glorious, even to a skier.
It's the best. Absolutely.
We'll go to Alan calling from Portland. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi, I live in Brunswick, and I'm currently in Portland. And one of the things that comes with spring that many people are familiar with is the run of salmon and the run of alewives. But I recently participated in a Trout Unlimited stream survey of sea-run brook trout, which are often not known other than serious fishermen. And we actually have documented some populations of brook trout in tiny, tiny coastal streams, often very much like a drainage ditch. I was in Yarmouth, and two unnamed streams held undocumented populations of brook trout. And that's one of the really important parts of Maine heritage and culture is the populations of brook trouts in our streams and, in fact, our coastal waters as well.
And how exciting for you, Alan, to be able to document something people didn't know before.
Yeah, that was really exciting. I used to be a science teacher, and that was quite an experience. Little miracles, and actually one rather large 10-inch miracle that I pulled out of a culvert in a tiny little stream, basically a drainage ditch.
Thank you. Noah, you're smiling and nodding.
That's just great. I love hearing the story.
And Beth?
I just wanted to encourage anybody who hasn't before, if you're close to the Midcoast at all this spring, in May, to check out Damariscotta Mills. The alewife run there is very accessible with boardwalks, and it's just incredible. It makes your blood race to see thousands of alewives coming and the birds diving after them and the racket it all makes. It's just a really wonderful.
And I was just looking that up the other day, Beth, and the festival is May 25th, if anybody's curious, the
yes.
big Alewife Festival in Damariscotta. We'll go to Charlotte calling from Washington. Hi, Charlotte. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm calling from Washington, Maine, and right beside our town office, we have a marshy area where the peepers let us all know in, when spring is coming. That, so that's a joyful thing for me. Another thing I wanted to mention is that our little town of Washington is hoping to work on restoring alewife passage to our lake, which is Washington Pond. And the third thing I wanted to mention is that there are a couple of places that regularly track ice out as well as ice in. And those are, of course, the Maine Department of Agriculture, I think Conservation and Forestry. It's the Maine Department, ACF. And the other one is Lake Stewards of Maine, which is a citizen science group that has been active for many, many years and is really a prototype for citizen science all over the country. So, and they're online at Lake Stewards of Maine. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Charlotte, and thank you for that information. Julie on Facebook says, my favorite sign of phenology is the sky dance of the woodcock. Every April, neighbors gather to hear the telltale meep at dusk and watch the birds fly over the field. Eric, I have a feeling I did a terrible meep. How would you say that?
Oh, mine would be worse.
Okay.
It's a peent.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Let's see. And somebody here, Bambi, is telling us about a whole bunch of events at Hidden Valley Nature Center in Jefferson coming up. So we'll post those. MidcoastConservancy.com has got those. And Mary says, my barn swallows arrived in the barn last evening, and a bluebird just greeted me in the pasture this morning. You know, northern Maine, Aroostook County, had an unbelievable amount of snow this winter. How will that affect what you all are keeping track of? Are there animals that are on their way, are ready to do something and can't because the snow's still there?
Absolutely. We recently, about 5 years ago, set up a whole series of nest boxes on our campus in Biddeford to attract animals to control mosquitoes. And part of that, it's really fascinating in that every year when we go out and clean them in April or early May, there's always a number of tree swallows that have expired in the boxes.
Oh.
So essentially what's happened is the birds have shown up and they've gotten there maybe in a cold afternoon and there hasn't been many aerial insects for them to eat. They've gone into the box for night and they just expired because they didn't have any food. And so similar things can happen for sure when you have animals showing up in places where there's snow. But that's a selective event. That's natural selection in action.
Nancy writes, our family's spring sign has always been the first chipmunk who comes out from hibernation. Do chipmunks technically hibernate or do they just kind of hide out? You all don't know.
They're hibernating.
They are actually hibernating. Yeah, squirrels don't, chipmunks do?
So gray squirrels don't, red squirrels don't. Chipmunks do, but chipmunks hibernate in a different way than groundhogs do. It's kind of a long process to describe.
Okay, then. I'll trust you on that. Melinda on Facebook, don't forget about the alewife run in Woolwich on the George Wright Road. I help count there every spring, and it's a great spot.
I should have said there are many, many, many alewives. Every tiny tributary has its own alewife run. And so those of you who know the secrets know where to go, and please spread the word.
All right, we've got one more call we're going to squeeze in. Helen in Norridgewock, if you can go quickly, that would be great.
Yes, I was going to say that my favorite are the snowdrops that push their way through the ice and snow. They're a real lesson in fortitude, I think. And then last week, the February Daphne started blooming. And I just always am amazed by the color from that and think, where did that name come from? February Daphne that blooms in April. And now, of course, the forsythia have started blooming and the daffodils, and it's lovely. That's all.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for calling and sharing. So many people have offered resources in today's program, so we're going to try to gather those together and put them on our Facebook page and our webpage after the program. And I want to thank our guests here for joining us for this really wonderful program. Don't forget to watch the program on PBS, on Maine Public Television, next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the Maine program Sunday at 5. Beth Bisson, thank you, Associate Director and Extension Program Leader for Maine Sea Grant at the University of Maine, Orono, and Program Coordinator for Signs of the Seasons. Noah Perlett, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Environmental Studies at the University of New England, and Eric Topper, Director of Education for Maine Audubon. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Isaac Merson took your calls. Excuse me, Sandra Harris ran the board today. My script was wrong. Isaac Merson took your calls. Our theme song was produced by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.